use the Sign Up Genius link called Volunteer to Participate Virtually on our website, mnhowlive.org. On the same webpage, you will find a link to our meeting, readings, and tools. If you have not signed up, you may volunteer to take a reading or a tool, or participate in any other way in the meeting's live chat. We do this in advance so that we can keep the meeting flowing smoothly. If you need technical help, there will be multiple coaching sessions Thursday evenings from 5:30 to 9 p.m. Central time on this same meeting. If you are unable to make this time, please send a note to minnesotahowlive@gmail.com. The audio portion of this meeting is being recorded. Please visit our website at mnhowlive.org to download the files. We ask that if you do need to eat during the meeting, please eat quietly in the back of the room. For those in person, please take a moment to silence or turn off your cell phones and do not connect to the room's Wi-Fi. To open the meeting, let's have a moment of quiet meditation. And for those who wish to join us in saying the Serenity Prayer, God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Thy will, not mine, be done. I assume that I am not alone this evening, but for the record, are there any other compulsive overeaters at this meeting other than myself? Woohoo! Yeah. The We Care book, the We Care folder will be circulating in the room for the duration of the meeting. The first time for you to list your name, telephone number, and email, and the rest for you to take names and phone numbers to call during the week. If you are joining us remotely, please use the meeting's chat function as a virtual We Care book and enter your first name, phone number, times available for phone calls, and whether or not you are currently a sponsor in the How format. We will then add you to the We Care book that is being circulated in the room. A copy of this list can be sent to you via email after the meeting. Overeaters Anonymous is a fellowship of individuals who, through shared experience, strength, and mutual support, are recovering from compulsive eating. We welcome everyone who wants to stop eating compulsively. There are no dues or fees for members. We are self-supporting through our own contributions, neither soliciting nor accepting outside donations. OA is not affiliated with any public or private organization, political movement, ideology, or religious doctrine. We take no position on outside issues. Our primary purpose is to abstain from compulsive eating and carry this message of recovery to those who still suffer. Would someone please read What Is How?
Hi, I'm Jane, compulsive overeater.
Hi, Jane. Welcome.
What is How? How is a movement within Overeaters Anonymous whose basic principle is that abstinence is the only means to freedom from compulsive overeating and the beginning of a spiritual life. Where and why did How begin? How began in Phoenix in 1981 as a means of reviving a group called OA Victorious. Its meeting format has been taken from Roseanne's book, I Put My Hand in Yours, and centers around the concept of service. Many of the questions used in How sponsoring stem from OA Plus and Westminster groups. The outline of service came from the OA Suffolk County, New York Sponsors Guide. Thanks, and I will pass.
Thanks, Jane. Would someone please read the only requirement?
I am trying to start my video camera here. Okay, there I go. Hi, Michelle. Hi. Michelle C., compulsive overeater.
Hi, Michelle.
The only requirement. Overeaters Anonymous. respects the autonomy of each OA group. We do suggest, however, that any group that has a requirement, in addition to the suggested 12 steps and 12 traditions, inform its members that these requirements are what that particular group has found effective in working the program, and do not represent OA as a whole. The members of this group have found the OA concept to be effective in working the OA program. The opinions expressed here this afternoon by those who share are their own and not necessarily those of OA. The Board of Trustees states, we understand the third tradition to mean that individual ways of working one's program should not exclude any compulsive overeater from attendance in participation at OA meetings anywhere, anytime. The only requirement for membership is the desire to stop eating compulsively. Anyone who says he or she is a member is a member. We of Overeaters Anonymous welcome all members with open arms. And with that, I pass.
Thanks, Michelle. Would someone please read the how concept?
Hi, everybody. Rebecca B., compulsive overeater in Ohio.
Hi, Rebecca.
The how concept. Overeaters Anonymous how meetings have been formed to offer the compulsive eater who accepts the 12 steps and 12 traditions as a program of recovery a disciplined and structured approach. How groups are formed in the belief that our disease is absolute, and that only absolute acceptance of the OA program will offer any sustained abstinence to those of us whose compulsion has reached a critical level. Therefore, we accept the 9 tools of program and the 12 steps and the 12 traditions as necessary for our recovery. In OA How, our daily action plan is outlined in the structured use of each of the other tools. Our meetings are dedicated to the concept of remaining honest, open-minded, and willing to listen. This is the how of the program. We pray that the collective group conscience and love that these ideals offer us will promote a strong sense of security that will enable us to experience a new unity and wholeness with all those around us, and that the how ideals will help us to progress in our program of recovery on a daily basis. To be certain, much of our strength is found in the structure of meetings and in the daily adherence to the program as it is written in our literature. The Tuesday meeting also firmly understands that after our recovery has begun through abstinence and the taking of the first 3 steps, our further surrender to the additional steps of recovery offers us a promise of happiness, contentment, and achievement in all areas of our lives. We ensure our continued and sustained abstinence from compulsive overeating by being forever aware that God is doing for us what we have never been able to do for ourselves. May God, as each of us understands him, open our minds and our hearts to the love which is manifested on this meeting. Amen.
Thanks, Rebecca.
Would someone please read Reflections for the Newcomer?
Okay, hello, this is Tamara. I'm a compulsive overeater.
Hi, Tamara.
Hi, Tamara. Welcome.
Thank you. Thank you. Reflections for the newcomer. Welcome to OA How. We are also glad that you've decided to become part of our fellowship. You know that the How concept is a discipline program. We believe that the discipline of weighing and measuring, of telephoning your sponsor at a particular time, of attending meetings and making phone calls, all lead to a life based on the universal discipline, which is accord rather than discord, even with many things going on around us. Therefore, if there is a breakdown in any of these areas, the concept is threatened, as is the individual's abstinence. We found that the discipline must remain as constant for the beginner as for the sponsor. If the newcomer shies away from this life's responsibility, the sponsor may give the newcomer's time slot to someone more committed to recovery. This is not a personal affront, but a matter of necessity. So many who think they should recover, in fact, are not ready. If the newcomer should show lack of commitment, the sponsor may then offer the newcomer assistance in finding a new sponsor. The rationale here is if the newcomer insists on picking up the food before the phone, then there's a breakdown in the level of communication between the sponsor and the newcomer. Frothy emotional appeal seldom suffices. That's from the doctor's opinion, the big book, page 26, paragraph 2. If the sponsor slips, get a new one. The pitfalls of self-deception cannot be overstressed if you are to recover. Therefore, a sponsor in all self-honesty must release all sponsees to continue his or her own recovery. A sponsor cannot give what he or she does not experience. Finally, you must believe that we need each other. All problems that arise can be worked on via the phone or person-to-person contact. Only positive, upbeat recovery belongs at our meetings. A body badly burned by alcohol does not often recover overnight, nor do twisted thinking and depression vanish in a twinkling. We are convinced that a spiritual mode of living is the most powerful restorative. That's from the family afterwards in the big book, page 33, paragraph 2. Good luck. Everyone in the fellowship is praying that you find the release from the obsession so many of us have. God bless, and no matter what, keep coming back. We'll always be here for you. Pass.
Thanks, Tamara. Mm-hmm. Would someone please read an excerpt from step 2 of the OA 12 by 12?
Hi, I'm Laura Kay. Can you hear me?
Yep. Yes.
Hi, Laura.
Okay. You gotcha.
Hi. All right, Laura Kay, compulsive overeater. Expert 2. When we look at with complete honesty at our lives, we see that where eating is concerned, we've acted in an extremely irrational and self-destructive manner. Under the compulsion to overeat, many of us have done things no sane person would think of doing. We have driven miles in the dead of night to satisfy a craving for food. We have eaten food that was frozen, burnt, stale, or even dangerously spoiled. We have eaten food off of other people's plates, off the floor, off the ground. We have dug food out of the garbage and eaten it. We have frequently lied about what we have eaten, lied to others because we didn't want to face the truth ourselves. We have stolen food from our friends, family, and employers, as well as from the grocery store. We have also stolen money to buy food. We have eaten beyond the point of being full, beyond the point of being sick of eating. We have continued to overeat, knowing all the while we are disfiguring and maiming our bodies. We have isolated ourselves to eat, damaging our relationships and denying ourselves a full social life. For the sake of our compulsive eating, we have turned ourselves into objects of ridicule and we have destroyed our health. Then, horrified by what we were doing with ourselves with food, we became obsessed with diets. We spent hundreds of dollars on weight loss schemes. We bought all sorts of appetite control drugs. We joined diet clubs and spas. We had ourselves hypnotized and analyzed. We had major surgery on our digestive systems. We had our ears stapled or our jaws wired shut. All of this we did willingly, hoping that someday we could have our cake and eat it too. Some of us went to doctor looking for a cure. The doctors gave us diets, but we were no better. We had no better success with those than the other diets we had been on. The doctors gave us shots and pills. Those worked for a while. We inevitably lost control and overate again, putting back on the weight we had worked so hard to lose. Many of us tried fasting with or without a doctor's supervision. Usually we lost weight, but as soon as we started eating again, the compulsive eating behavior returned along with the weight. Some of us learned to purge ourselves with vomiting, laxatives, and excessive exercise. We'd stuff food in our mouths until we were in physical pain, then we'd get rid of it. We damaged our digestive systems and our teeth while we starved our bodies of nutrients needed to live. Those of us who were overweight got plenty of advice from others how to reach our ideal size, but nothing permanently solved our problem. We found that no matter what we did to ease our turmoil, our compulsive eating eventually returned. Over the long haul, our weight went up and our self-esteem went down. After a while, we became battle-weary and discouraged. Still, we could never accept our powerlessness. The prospect of being obese, sick, and out of control for the rest of our lives led some of us to conclude that life was simply not worth living. Many of us thought about suicide. Some of us tried it. Most of us, however, never reached suicidal desperation. Instead, we took comfort in a feeling that everything was all right as long as we got enough to eat. The only problem was that as our compulsive eating progressed, it became harder for us to get enough. Instead of bringing comfort, the overeating backfired. The more we ate, the more we suffered, yet we kept on continuing to overeat. Our true insanity could be seen in the fact that we kept right on trying to find comfort in excess food long after it began to cause us misery. That'll pass.
Thanks. Okay, would someone please read from chapter 5 of the book Alcoholics Anonymous, How It Works?
Hi, again, Jane, compulsive overeater.
Hi, Jane, welcome.
Chapter 5, How It Works. Rarely have we seen a person fail who has thoroughly followed our path. Those who do not recover are people who cannot or will not completely give themselves to this simple program. Usually men and women who are constitutionally incapable of being honest with themselves. There are such unfortunates. They are not at fault. They seem to have been born that way. They are naturally incapable of grasping and developing a manner of living which demands rigorous honesty. Their chances are less than average. There are those, too, who suffer from grave emotional and mental disorders, but many of them do recover if they have the capacity to be honest. Our stories disclose in a general way what we used to be like, what happened, and what we are like now. If you have decided that you want what we have and are willing to go to any length to get it, then you are ready to take certain steps. At some of these, we balked. We thought we could find an easier, softer way, but we could not. With all the earnestness at our command, we beg of you to be fearless and thorough from the very start. Some of us have tried to hold on to our old ideas, and the result was nil until we let go absolutely. Remember that we deal with alcohol, cunning, baffling, powerful. Without help, it is too much for us. But there is one who has all power. That one is God. May you find him now. Half measures availed us nothing. We stood at the turning point. We asked his protection and care with complete abandon. Here are the steps we took, which are suggested as a program of recovery. And I will pass with that. Thank you.
Thanks, Jane. Would someone please read the 12 steps of recovery?
Hello there. Michelle C., compulsive overeater.
Hi, Michelle.
The 12 steps of Overeaters Anonymous. 1, we admitted we were powerless over food and that our lives had become unmanageable. 2, came to believe in a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. 3, made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood him. 4, made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. 5, admitted to God and to ourselves and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. 6, were entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. 7, asked him to remove our shortcomings. 8, made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. 9, made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. 10, continued to make personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. 11, sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood him. Praying only for knowledge of his will and for, I'm sorry, knowledge of his will, and for us, and the power to carry that out. 12. Having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, we try to carry the message to compulsive overeaters and to practice these principles in all our affairs. Many of us exclaimed, "What an order! I can't go through with it." Do not be discouraged. No one among us has been able to maintain anything like perfect adherence to these principles. We are not saints. The point is that we are willing to grow along spiritual lines. The principles we have set down are guides to progress. We claim spiritual progress rather than spiritual perfection. From the Big Book, Chapter 5, page 60. And with that, I pass.
Thanks, Michelle.
Would someone please read the 12 traditions of the program?
Hi, my name's Heidi. I'm a compulsive overeater.
Hi, Heidi. Welcome.
Thank you. The 12 traditions are, number one, our common welfare should come first. Personal recovery depends upon OA unity. Number two, for our group purpose, there is but one ultimate authority, a loving God, as he may express himself in our group conscience. Our leaders are but trusted servants. They do not govern. Number three, the only requirement for OA membership is the desire to stop eating compulsively. Number four, each group should be autonomous except in matters affecting other groups or OA as a whole. Number five, each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the compulsive eater who still suffers. Number six, an OA group ought never endorse, finance, or lend the OA name to any related facility or outside enterprise, lest problems of money, property, prestige divert us from our primary purpose. Number seven, every OA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. Number eight, Overeaters Anonymous should remain forever non-professional, but our service centers may employ special workers. Number nine, OA as such ought never be organized, but we may create service boards or committees directly responsible to those they serve. Number 10, Overeaters Anonymous has no opinion on outside issues, hence the OA name ought never be drawn into public controversy. Number 11, our public relations policy is based on attraction rather than promotion. We need always maintain personal anonymity at the level of press, radio, films, television, and other public media of communication. And number 12, anonymity is the spiritual foundation of all these traditions, ever reminding us to place principles before personalities.
Thanks, Heidi. Thank you. The tools of recovery. The 12 steps of Overeaters Anonymous are a program of recovery. Webster's dictionary defines tool as any person or thing used to get something done. We have many tools in this program which will help us to recover on a daily basis. Tools are essential to get the job done, and they work for us. In order for a tool to work, it must be used.
What?
Imagine that. It's true. So too with our tools of recovery. I will ask that the house sponsors explain how they use a particular tool with a limit of 3 minutes for each tool. Would someone be willing to be the timekeeper?
Thanks, Mary.
Thanks, Mary. You got it? Thank you. Abstinence, plan of eating.
Hi, all. It's Megan in Virginia. I'm a compulsive overeater and an OA house sponsor.
Hi, and Megan. Welcome.
I was so busy together my scale that I forgot to page up to the reading. Hold on a second. Sorry. Almost there. Okay, here we go. Abstinence, plan of eating. A food plan is a commitment to recovery. The how disciplines were designed for food addicted people. We believe in a disciplined and structured approach. How abstainers do not modify their food plan to suit themselves and commit themselves to black and white abstinence. Deviations invite the return of many other problems. A food plan is not a personal thing in how. This means that we depend upon each other for the strength and growth that we need to remain abstinent. We join together in an effort to free the compulsive overeater from the bondage of food through the use of a food plan, positive thinking, the 12 steps and 12 traditions of Alcoholics Anonymous. We eat weighed and measured meals with nothing in between except sugar-free beverages and sugar-free gum. Food is written down, called into our sponsors, and committed so that we can get on with our recovery and out of the food. We also believe that negative thinking is a large part of our disease, so we abstain from negative thinking. Those of us who work the HOW program concepts use the following guidelines for food plans. We do not write our own food plan. We use a food plan given to us by a doctor or nutritionist or dietitian. We discuss it with our sponsors. We do not pick one that allows any of our binge foods. If some food on our plan becomes a problem, we avoid it. Number two, unless approved by a sponsor, we do not skip meals, switch meals, or combine meals. We do not deviate or manipulate our food plan in any way. If we need to change our committed food during the day, we call a sponsor. Number three, we weigh and measure all our portions so there is no guesswork. We do not measure by eye. We use a measuring cup, spoon, and a scale. And here I'm going to verbally describe my abstinence kit, and I have some props with me. So this is my big kitchen scale. It's pretty sizable. It has a plug. I can plug it in. It also has batteries. And it has some buttons here, the on and off, but it has buttons that zero it out, and it has buttons that switch from ounces to grams to fluid ounces, and I can use that. So I primarily use this scale for everything. I weigh everything, weigh my fats and my liquids and my proteins, my starches. I find that easier. I put my plate on that scale. I put on, say, tonight it was 4 ounces of chicken and cheese. So I put that on there. I zero it out. Then I weighed my salad, and then I added the sour cream, and I made my whole meal right on that plate. For me, that saves dishes, and it's, you know, time efficient, and I don't have it's really the dishes. That's really what it is. But sometimes people will also use cups. So I have, back when I did use cups, I really liked these. These are collapsible cups. They go great in an abstinence kit. They pop open. And if I was going to say, put, say blueberries, say I was going to have a cup of blueberries, I would put them in there. And then I would make sure that nothing was coming up over the edge with the straight edge like this. And the same things with your teaspoons. If you're doing, say, a teaspoon of oil or butter, it's the same thing. You always flatten it out so that you don't have anything bumped up over the top and anything dripping on the bottoms or the sides of anything gets wiped off. What's inside is ours. What's outside is for another meal, for the dog, for the kids, for the husband, whatever. And I need my food plan, which I got from my nutritionist. That's essential. I carry a bag when I'm out. Usually, honestly, I bring almost my own food everywhere. But if I were going to be eating out, I would have backups in my food bag and my little portable scale, which I neglected to bring upstairs with me. Sorry. And then finally, I need my cell phone, because without my cell phone, I can't make food changes. I can't commit my food in the morning to my sponsor. So all of those things are my abstinence kit. All right, going back, number four, we weigh ourselves once a month until we have reached goal weight, and then once a week on maintenance. Five, unless advised otherwise by your doctor, we take a multivitamin and drink 64 ounces of water a day. Six, we do not drink alcohol. Seven, we do not use foods containing sugar, except if sugar is listed fifth or beyond in this level. And above all, we do not vacillate or water down the disciplined nature of the HOW program. Not the extra string bean that counts. It is the decision to take it. And so I was thinking about my food plan today and how grateful I am, that today I know that this food plan is essential for me staying in fit spiritual condition and for me to stay in contact with my higher power. I was thinking back, I like this quote. It's from the doctor's opinion on page Roman numeral 30, I believe it is. Let's see, it says, all of these and many others have but one symptom in common. They cannot start drinking without developing the phenomenon of craving. This phenomenon, as we have suggested, may be the manifestation of an allergy which differentiates these people and sets them apart as a distinct entity. It has never been by any treatment with which we are familiar permanently eradicated. The only relief we have to suggest is entire abstinence. And so that's really the critical piece for us as compulsive overeaters is what does entire abstinence mean? For an alcoholic, it means they don't drink. I mean, that's really clear cut. But for us, we have to eat 3, 4, 5, some people eat 6 times a day. And so what does entire abstinence mean? Entire abstinence means that I do not eat anything that is not on my food plan. I do not eat anything that is not committed to my sponsor or another sponsor if I need to make a food change. I do not eat anything that is a personal trigger food for me. So we all don't eat things that are fifth, you know, if sugar's, you know, higher than fifth or beyond. We don't, you know, so none of us are out there eating the Oreos and the marshmallows. That's not abstinent. But each of us has particular foods that are not safe for them. For somebody, it might be nuts, dried fruit. Other people, it might be a rice cake. It doesn't matter. We all have our own things. So I don't eat any of those foods either. For me, it's gummy vitamins. Like I cannot have sugar-free gummy vitamins. I will eat the whole bottle. Ask me how I know. So everybody has something like that. And what we do is we commit our food to our sponsor. We stick to these guidelines. And as long as we stay within those guidelines, we are entirely abstinent. The opportunity to work the steps to now address the problem that we have with living. And it's a wonderful, miraculous thing. So thank you for letting me pitch tonight, and I pass.
Thanks, Megan. Sponsorship.
Oh, thank you for starting my video. I couldn't find myself. Hi, my name is Sue L, and I'm a compulsive overeater.
And hi, Sue. Welcome.
Hi, everybody. Sponsorship is our OA members who are committed to abstinence and to living the 12 steps and 12 traditions to the best of their ability. We ask a sponsor to guide us through our program of recovery on all 3 levels, physical, emotional, and spiritual. In working with other members of OA and sharing their experience, strength, and hope, sponsors continually renew and reaffirm their own sobriety. Sponsors share their program up to the level of their own experience. Ours is a program of attraction. Find a sponsor who has what you want and ask how it was achieved. A member may work with more than one sponsor and may change sponsors at will. A house sponsor is a compulsive overeater who has completed at least 70 days of back-to-back abstinence and who has taken the first 3 steps of the program. Sponsors have also completed at least 70 days of assignments. Reflections to the sponsor, suggestions for discussion. No list of reflections and meditations are end-alls and be-alls for the newcomer. A sponsor must be attentive not only to what the new person is saying, but also to what the newcomer is not saying. There are many newcomers who are reticent to purchase books and who are hesitant to throw themselves headlong into the program. Therefore, we have a list of pre-commitment assignments. Above all, we do not vacillate or water down the disciplined nature of the HOW program. It is not the extra string bean that is the problem. It is the decision to have it that results in some trouble. The how concept is an alternative for people who have tried everything else. Therefore, the program is an immutable triumvirate of tools, steps, and tradition. Using the tools of weighing and measuring our food, sponsors, meetings, phone call, reading and writing, service and anonymity, we follow the 12 steps and 12 traditions of OA in order to free ourselves from the bondage of food addiction. Sponsors do not have the right to play God. We help each other. And so I'm just going to read. So my favorite story out of the fourth edition is called Window of Opportunity. It just cracks me up. And so this is a quote here. One momento. Dang it. Well, okay. I can't find it. So I'll read this because this is good too. The speaker said, if you're an apple, you can be the best apple you can be, but you can never be an orange. I was an apple, all right, and for the first time, I understood that I had spent my life trying to be an orange. I looked around at a room filled with apples, and if I was understanding the speaker, most of them were no longer trying to be oranges. And that was me. I mean, I definitely tried to be something I wasn't. I didn't have the book on how to do life until I started actually studying and reading the big book like we do in our program. As far as sponsoring goes, you know, as far as being a sponsor, I'm going to focus on that a little bit today is, you know, I don't have all the answers and I am not God. And I, you know, sponsees will have issues. I have no idea what to do or what to say. And I'll just say that, I have no experience with raising kids. I have no experience with kids with special needs, for example, but somebody does in this program. And I usually try to steer them to whoever does have that kind of knowledge. And I have to remember that I'm not a therapist and I'm not the person that, you know, is going to provide them the answer. I'm just going to be there to listen to their patterns and point that out and, you know, say something like, gosh, this keeps coming up. Is there something that you've done in the past that have helped you when you've had a repeating problem come up, you know? And as far as being sponsored, you know, that is the key, being sponsored, you know, surrendering every day to another person. And I remember in the very beginning, I remember thinking, because my sponsor was like saying something, I'm like, she's dead wrong. I mean, she is wrong about this. And what I realized was that her being wrong was better than what I was doing. So I might as well do whatever she thinks, even if I think it's wrong. And that has served me well, by doing other people, what other people think when I'm not in a clear place to think, you know? And I've done that for others, you know, I've had to be an advocate for others when they're not in a good place to think, you know? I'm really grateful to be here tonight. I'm grateful to have this meeting because I just wasn't able to go to my regular meeting, and I'm grateful for this meeting. So thank you.
Thanks, Sue. Well, all sponsors, how and OA, please join me in sharing the following. How long in OA and how? How long abstinent in OA or how? How much weight lost or gained? Oh, okay. This is not a time for sharing for sponsors. Please keep it brief and no applauding between sponsors if they wish to. Sponsors can announce that they have an opening for a sponsee and provide their phone numbers. Please form a line starting at the microphone and continue behind me. Remote sponsors are invited to share following our line by clicking the raise hand button and turning on your video camera or just turning on your video. When it is your turn to share, you will hear your name and see you are unmuted by host screen prompt. Following your share, please turn off your video as the meeting moderator remutes your line. Sponsors joining us on the phone, please wait for a pause in the line and press star and six on your telephone keypad. Okay.
Hi, I'm Howard, a compulsive overeater. I'm a sponsor on the late shift. I've been abstaining a little over 33 years. I have 18 years and 7 months of abstinence in OA How. I've gained 10 pounds and a little bit of sanity.
Good evening, I'm Mary G., compulsive overeater. Came to OA in Western Massachusetts in the spring of 2004. We moved to St. Paul, Minnesota, October 2012. My first meeting was Halloween. I became abstinent the next day, and I've lost and maintained 75 pounds.
Hi, my name is Heidi. I'm a compulsive overeater. I came directly into How on October 10th, 2007. I lost 150 pounds and kept it off for almost 7 years. And then I chose to leave the program and I quickly gained 110 of that back. I returned a few years later. My abstinence date is October 26th of last year and I'm down about 65 pounds.
Welcome newcomers. I'm Betsy H., a critical level compulsive overeater and a food restrictor. I started in the rooms of Overeaters Anonymous in 1975. I stuck around those rooms, but never fully surrendered to my disease. I surrendered to the How program December 12th, 04, and I'm maintaining a 68 pound weight loss.
Tamara.
Hello, my name is Tamara. I'm a compulsive overeater. I think you can see me, yes. I came into traditional OA in January of 2016. I heard about the HOW program at the Buffalo Retreat and became abstinent April 3rd of 2017. Because of the Miracle program, I've been relieved of 97 pounds from my top weight, with over 75 pounds lost in the HOW program. My recommitment date is December 1st of 2019, and I pass. Thank you.
Jane.
Hi, everyone. I'm Jane, compulsive overeater in Port Alberni, BC, Canada. I came into regular OA 9 years ago, and I came into HOW September 19th of 2019. And I have had abstinence ever since then, and I am a HOW sponsor. Thanks.
Caroline.
Good evening, friends. I'm Caroline, compulsive eater and bulimic. My abstinence date recommitted is September the 6th of 2016. By the grace of God and the power of this fellowship, I'm maintaining a 40-pound weight loss and free from binge purging for more than a decade. I'll pass. Thanks.
Megan.
Hey, y'all. This is Megan. I'm in Virginia. I'm a compulsive overeater and I'm an OA House sponsor. My back-to-back abstinence date is June 8th of 2015. I've given away 90 pounds in program twice. I'm a relapse survivor and I've had an abstinent pregnancy and I passed.
Laura.
Hi, I'm Laura K., a compulsive overeater and overrestrictor. I came into HOW in November of 2014. My most recent abstinence date is July 2015. I'm down 70 pounds from my top weight, 40 as that has been in program. And by the grace of God and this fellowship, I've been able to work this program in 3 different continents and 5 different countries.
Hi, everyone. My name is Sue L., and I'm a compulsive overeater. I came to OA How on December 8th of 2002. I got abstinent 2 days later on the 10th. In that time, I've been relieved of 135 pounds, have been maintaining that for over 14 years.
Nancy.
Hi, this is Nancy, and I am...
can't hear you and see the whole of you.
What? I'm sorry?
We're just seeing the top part of your head.
Well, I don't know. I'm first time doing this. I'm not too good at this. So let me see. That didn't help. Sorry.
Stand up.
Okay, that'll do it. Can you see me?
There.
Okay, I'm Nancy. I'm from Virginia. And I'm a 2-hour health format sponsor and about 60 pounds down from my top weight. And I think my back-to-back was May 2002. Pass.
Chris.
Hi, I'm Chris J., grateful compulsive overeater from Sterling Heights, Michigan. Happy to be at this meeting. I entered HOW in 2005 in Clinton Township, and I became black and white abstinent on July 26, 2007. By the grace of God, maintaining 123-pound weight loss. Mm. And that, with that, I'll pass.
Let's see, ask him there.
Is there anybody else that wants to share for sponsor? Anybody else on the phone?
I would, hi. Hi, yes, this is Melanie from Oregon. Hello, everyone. I am a two-hour HOW sponsor, and I was first introduced to Overeaters Anonymous in 1989 and got abstinent in HOW in November 5th, 2005. Thank God for that. I have an anniversary date in HOW of November 5th, 2018. And I've maintained over 165-pound weight loss for about 13 years or so. Grateful for that. Pass.
Abby.
Hi. Hi, I'm Abby, compulsive overeater. My OA HOW back-to-back abstinence is January 20, 2019. I've been 80 pounds heavier and about 10 pounds lighter. And yeah. That's it. Right? I can't remember. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Any other sponsors? Okay. Yay for sponsors. Woohoo! We should remember that all OAs have clay feet. We should not set any member upon a pedestal and mark her or him out as a perfect OA. It is not fair to the person to be singled out in this fashion, and if the person is wise, she or he will not wish it. If the person we single out as an ideal OA has a fall, we are in danger of falling too. Without exception, we are only one bite away from a binge. No matter how long we have been in OA or HOW, nobody is entirely safe. OA itself should be our ideal, not any particular member of it. Anonymity.
Hi, I'm Caroline, compulsive eater and bulimic.
Hi, Caroline, welcome.
Thank you. Anonymity is a tool as well as a tradition. Hold on, I'm still getting it up on my computer here. But I do know it's a tool as well as a tradition, because it guarantees that we will place principles before personalities. It offers each of us freedom of expression and protection against gossip. Anonymity assures us that only we as individual OA members have the right to make our membership known within our community. Anonymity at the level of press, radio, films, and television means that we never allow our names, our last names, or faces to be used once we identify ourselves as OA members. Within the fellowship, anonymity means that whatever we share with another OA member will be held in respect and confidence. What we hear at meetings should remain there. It should be understood, however, that anonymity must not be used to limit our effectiveness within the fellowship. It is not a break of anonymity to give our names and addresses to the secretary of our group or to other service offices of OA for the purpose of conducting OA business, which is primarily 12-step work. It is likewise not a break of anonymity to enlist 12-step help for group members in trouble, provided we are careful to omit specific personal information. If their disease is reactivated and we persist in protecting their anonymity, we may in effect help kill them and their anonymity. Anonymity is the part of the program that allows each of us to stand in front of our fellows and share for the first time honestly who we are, where we have been, and where we hope to go, without fear that our story will be told outside these rooms. For many of us, the OA rooms are the first place where we have no fear of being judged or criticized. We are accepted as we are at that moment. This is the first time for most of us that we experience sharing. We are not told what we did wrong. We come into OA at rock bottom, mangled emotionally, physically, and spiritually. We are supported back to help with honesty, open-mindedness, and willingness. We are encouraged to speak of our pain, and we are lovingly told, "Your secrets are safe. Come share our recovery." Recovery on a threefold level: physical, emotional, and spiritual. Lastly, a word to newcomers: please join us. However, if you decide that our program is not for you, please remember that our anonymity allows us to grow and recover from a very serious disease. Whom you see here, what you hear here, when you leave here, let it stay here.
You're here. For me, anonymity has come to mean love. And the reason for that is when I first came into OA, of course, I thought we were all very ashamed of ourselves, and that's why we were anonymous. But I've come to learn differently, that over time, what I found is that people just accepted me as I am. I didn't have to prove myself in any way to anyone. I didn't have to say where I lived, what kind of car I drove, you know, what my degrees were, what town I grew up in. I mean, all of those things that I used to use for to indicate my own status, somehow being snotty and snooty and to other people, weren't required in OA. In fact, we didn't talk about it at all. We just talked about our disease, and I was accepted just as myself, just as I am, as a person with a disease, suffering, but who also has something to offer others in helping others with their recovery. And through all of that process, I came to realize that people just love me as I am. I didn't have to do something for it. Finally led me to accept myself as I am and to come to love myself too. Just as we say, let us love you until you learn to love yourself. And that's what happened for me. So it was that anonymity, that not having to prove myself or say anything about me, that loved me back to life. And I hope that I'm bringing that to others in my time and program. It's just loving each of you as a person, as another person who's suffering, not better than, worse than. We are all here equally, sharing in the joy of recovering one day at a time in this program. With that, I'll pass.
Thanks, Caroline.
Telephone calls.
All right. Hi, I'm Laura K. I'm a compulsive overeater and restrictor.
Hi, Laura. Welcome.
Okay. Telephone. Compulsive overeating is a disease of isolation. The telephone is a means of communicating with other compulsive overeaters between meetings. It provides an immediate outlet for those hard-to-handle highs and lows we all experience. The telephone is also a daily link to our sponsors, and as a part of the surrender process, is a tool by which we learn to ask for help, reach out and extend that same help to others. In a way, how? We are asked to make at least 4 telephone calls a day, 1 to our sponsor and 3 more to other OA members. These calls give us an opportunity to talk program on a daily basis. The telephone is our lifeline. And I'm really grateful for the telephone because it has become where food used to be my reflex to every situation in life. If I was really excited, I would put food in my mouth. Or if I was really sad, any emotion, any event, anything, food was the answer. And that was my automatic reaction. And the telephone has taught me, even if I don't know how to handle a situation, I just pick up the phone and I just do the next right thing. And sometimes I pick up the phone to get advice from somebody about how to handle something. Today, I went outside and my car, a wheel had been stolen off my car, and both of the license plates had been changed to, like, someone exchanged license plates from a stolen car onto my car. And my first reaction was like, where I would have thrown a fit before, I just was like, okay, just make a call. you know, and just like gets me into that mode of action instead of like feeling sorry for myself or this shouldn't happen to me. Like, it just teaches me a level of acceptance and to like, there's always help out there if you're willing to ask for it. And so it just like from there, it was like, yeah, it was inconvenient, but the next step just became more apparent, like called the police, got them involved, you know, then got, you know, like just the next thing came and the next thing came and it's the end of the night and it all worked out. So I am just grateful that it teaches me to just start going. And it helps me to get connected with people who know how to solve problems. Like, I have like at my fingertips, like hundreds of people I could call and just talk about something that's going on, and they are able to help provide a solution or just listen. A lot of times it's just about listening. So it's an like invaluable tool, and we're so lucky we get to do it because there's not a lot of people you can call at 6 a.m. and be like, this is going on with me right now. But we have that in this fellowship. So that I'll pass.
Meetings.
Hi, I'm Howard, a compulsive overeater.
Hi, Howard. Welcome.
Thank you. Meetings are gatherings of two or more compulsive eaters who come together to share their experience before and after recovery and to share the strength and hope OA has given them. Though there are many kinds of meetings, fellowship is the basis of all of them, of them all. As HOW members, we attend at least one HOW meeting a week. Meetings are an opportunity for us to identify and confirm our common problem by relating to one another and by sharing the gifts we receive through this program. So my first meeting that I went to, because it was close to my house, was kind of a struggling meeting. There was the person that kind of started it and led it, who had a really great program. She'd been absent a long time, doing a lot of service, working the steps, that kind of thing. And then there was like five or six other people, and then two or three people that were new. And for some reason, I was kind of drawn to those that were struggling. So I remember a lot of people would share, saying, well, the food was pretty good this week. And so after a while, that's how I would share. I'd say, well, the food was pretty good this week. You know, I don't know what that, you know, I mean, looking back, it didn't mean too much. But so, you know, I wasn't drawn to the person that was really strong. I was kind of drawn to other people. So anyway, someone suggested I go to this other meeting, which was very different. It was a group of women that were in AA, and they were cross addicted, and they wanted to find the same kind of recovery in OA that they had in AA. So I started to hear people most of the people in the group share from a position of strength and a position of abstinence, and how they were working the steps and how they were resolving problems. And someone was getting divorced, and someone was, you know, changing jobs, and they would deal with things, and they would just, you know, take it a day at a time, and they would work through things, and they would look, you know, they talk about how they were, their family, how they're healing with their family, healing with themselves and with, you know, siblings and that kind of thing. It was, you know, so it kind of gave me that perspective. So when I finally, after maybe a year or so, started really working the steps, got abstinent, started working the steps, you know, I had that reference. I heard other people that were healing relationships in their lives. I heard other people that were making huge changes in their lives, who were experiencing a personal transformation, that we were becoming different people. And that encouraged and inspired me to do the same thing. So I just started to look at my own part in things and you know, work through the inventory and talk to people about situations. It was so easy. It's so easy for me to justify anything in my head. You know, I mean, I've got, like, in my head, there's a drama going on, and it's all your fault. And it just started to change my perspective. You know, just going to meetings and hearing that recovery, and then talking to a sponsor who really helped me work through the specifics in my life, talking specifically about what was going on. And she was really good. You know, I would say, you know, someone yelled at me and isn't that terrible? And she would say, well, tell me what happened. You know, what did they say? What did you say? And I would kind of tell them and they would give me their thoughts on the matter. And it usually was always, well, you know, I think you could have handled this better. I think you shouldn't have really said that. And they would say, you know, you really kind of started this off and they were just responding to you. And so having that new perspective was really started this revolution in my head and in my life. And with that, I'll pass. Thank you.
Thanks, Howard. Meetings. Oh, that was what? Oh, you just did meetings. Literature and writing, sorry. Can't hear you. Oh.
Okay.
There you
I'm
go.
Tamara, compulsive overeater.
Hi, Tamara.
Camera's not set up too well, but anyways. Literature and writing. Literature, we study the textbook, Alcoholics Anonymous, referred to as the Big Book, and the 12 Steps and 12 Traditions, another AA book to reinforce our program. By substituting the words food and compulsive eating for the words alcohol and alcoholism, we can identify closely. We also read OA literature, the OA book, Overeaters Anonymous, referred to as the Brown Book, and the OA 12 Steps and 12 Traditions. For today, for daily meditation and Lifeline, our Journal of Recovery. On a daily basis, our literature impresses on us certain basic truths that we found vital to our growth. Our literature and the AA books are an ever-available tool that gives insight into our problem, as well as the strength to deal with it and the very real hope that there is a solution. Writing. In addition to our writing, our inventories, and the list of people we've harmed, most of us have found that writing has been an indispensable tool for working the steps. Further putting our thoughts and feelings down on paper, or describing a troubling incident, help us to better understand our actions and reactions in a way that's often not revealed to us by simply thinking or talking about them. In the past, compulsive eating was our most common reaction to life. When we put our difficulties down on paper, it becomes easier to see situations more clearly and perhaps better discern any necessary action. Before program, I had quite a few self-help books on my shelf. I hadn't read any of them, but I thought it would look impressive if people came into my home and saw that I had all those insightful books. It was basically a real waste of money when I think of it now. But I never really had how-to instructions on how to live life, the daily ups and downs of life. And I was always searching for the fairy tale type of story that I thought I deserved in life. But then I was introduced to this book, The Big Book. Actually, I have a little big book. This I thought of as my first ever instructions on it was a how-to book on recovery. How was I going to recover from my disease? And it's just very, very valuable and just full of a lot of insight. And the second literature that I bought was For Today, The Daily Reader. And this to me seemed to be the how-to book for daily life. I mean, obviously one day out of, for each page. And it taught me how to not only recover, but how to deal with everything in life. What I really liked about it was that there was an index at the back. So if I was, for instance, wanted to read about willingness, of course, there are the pages right there. and it was nice and handy. I was really frustrated with the big book at first because I thought that literature should have an index. I wanted everything just categorized so I could find it quickly and what story it was and everything, and there was no index. So I was very happy when this had an index. So I could look up Serenity if I was having a bad day, and I could read about peace. This is for today. It's on page 357. It says, inward peace is not easily come by for a compulsive overeater. Stuffing down anxiety and fear with food gives an illusion of calm, but food as has the shortest lifespan of all addictive substances. How then do I maintain inward peace? The same way I remain abstinent, by giving everything to my higher power, my fears, my worries, my life. I abandon all efforts to control, to force life to conform to my will, and I rest as peacefully as an infant in its mother's arms. The 12-step program might well be called a set of instructions for finding and keeping inward peace. And I pass. Thank you.
Thanks, Tamara. Service.
Hi, Chris.
Can't hear you. Still can't hear you. Oh.
Okay, here's your stand-in, Chris. Service tool number 7, this is Mary.
Hi, Mary.
Carrying the message to the compulsive overeater who still suffers is the basic purpose of our fellowship and therefore the most fundamental form of service. Any service, no matter how small, that will help reach a fellow sufferer adds to the quality of our own recovery. Putting away chairs, making coffee, talking to newcomers, doing whatever needs to be done in a group or for OA as a whole are ways in which we give back what we have so generously been given. Do what you can when you can. A life of sane and happy usefulness is what we are promised as a result of working the 12 steps. Service fulfills that promise. Always to extend the hand and heart of OA to all who share my compulsion, for this I am responsible. It's interesting how we can do service both inside the rooms and also outside the rooms. I'm thinking today, I was listening to a program on the radio having to do with intermittent eating. And, you know, I know that my daughter tries this, and we have lots of friends, at least I have some friends and family members that are doing sort of things that are questionable for their health. And I am so glad that one of the services I do for my family is that I am abstinent, and they know that I'm on a food plan. And when she came over today to help us do some cleaning, I offered her a salad, which she happily ate. And when she talked about giving up sweets for Lent, I said, "My, why don't you add a vegetable?" So we can actually, without, you know, being heavy-handed or anything, just by our what we do with our own food and our own situations and our own spheres of influence. For instance, I go to a house group on Thursday nights, and they always have cookies and cakes and stuff, and they know that I don't eat that. And so, you know, I'm there, you know, I'm not looking like I'm deprived or anything, but If anybody wants any information, I have it. So don't underestimate any time you're out in public, whether at a restaurant with friends or with your family, what a service that is to show them a different way of living, a new way of life. So with that, I pass.
Thanks, Mary. Will all people doing service for OA at any level please stand and applaud service? Ooh. All right. If you have not yet added your information to the chat for our We Care book, please take a moment to do so now. We can add it to the book here in the room. We will keep the We Care book circulating until everybody has had an opportunity to sign it. The folder will continue to circulate for the duration of the meeting so that everyone may take names and phone numbers for their personal contacts. Enter your email in the chat to receive the list. Is there anyone who has not yet signed it? I haven't. The Minnesota OA How Live meeting is a friendly place. We want to get to know each other. If you are here with us today for the first time in the meeting room, will you please stand and introduce yourself by first name only? If you are attending for the first time virtually, please turn on your video and unmute your line or press star and six on your telephone's keypad. Anybody new? Okay, may we have a treasurer's report? Not tonight. We need money and we have money, so. Okay, our seventh tradition helps this meeting provided the equipment enhance our website, make it accessible to individuals who are deaf or anyone using ASL, refine the technology, develop other live OA face-to-face groups and more. A basket will be passed for those here in the room and those joining virtually. You may now go to minnesotahowlive.org to donate. And tonight I'm gonna read, we've got some bad news for you. Oh, it's so sad, so sad. It was bad news for us and it will probably be bad news for you. Whether you quit 6 days, months, or years, if you go out and take that first compulsive bite of food, you'll end up just like you have been in the past. You are a compulsive overeater. And that's from, hard to believe. Big book, page 187, so it must be true. Are there any announcements here in the room or virtually?
Hi, I'm Heidi, a compulsive overeater.
Hey, Heidi.
And I just wanted to announce that this meeting will have a group conscious business meeting in 2 weeks from tonight. That is St. Patrick's Day, the 17th of March. And we can discuss anything. If you want to send me a chat message, we can add it to the list, but we definitely will be discussing and voting on whether or not we want to start this meeting 1 hour earlier at 6 p.m. Central Time, which is 7 p.m. Eastern and 4 p.m. Pacific, and 5 for Mountain. So if you have anything else you want to add to that, and we'll announce it the next 2 weeks, but it'll be at 6 p.m. So we're going to do a test run at the time that we're looking to change our meeting time to, 6 p.m. on the 17th. And again, if you want to add anything to the group conscious discussion, you do have to be there to discuss your topic virtually. And let me know. Thank you.
Thanks, Heidi. Any other announcements? Literature and books, newcomer and sponsor materials are located at the virtual intergroups resource page at www.oahowphonemeetings.com. You can purchase OA books and pamphlets at bookstore.oa.org. It is now time for medallions. At How Meetings, we recognize the milestones of recovery for those working the How program. All other OA abstinence is given a round of applause.
Yay!
Yay! Anyone joining us virtually may also request a medallion by turning on your camera and unmuting your phone. Okay, so I am going to do the medallions. I am the medallion gal. So here we have it. We have lots of medallions because we like to celebrate in our meeting. And I will tell you why we like to celebrate is because it's a big damn deal to stay abstinent. Month after, day after day, month after month, year after year, it is really something to celebrate. And we always want to continue to celebrate because we always want the newcomer to know that this program works if you work it. So why don't we start with the larger medallions tonight, and we'll go from 4 to 8 years tonight. Not tonight. How about 3 years? 2 years? 18 months? Anybody with 1 year? 9 months?
Pause.
Oh. Is there somebody that has a medallion?
No, it's 90 days.
Oh, 90 days. Coming up. Great.
Do
6 months. 3 months?
There we go.
Yay.
Yeah.
Yay, Tamara. Woo! All right. Yay. Way to go, Tamara. Awesome. Here's your virtual medallion. That's 3 months? Yeah. 2 months? 1 month? 30 days. That's a big one. How about anybody want the 24-hour medallion, or so-called the chip-o-desire? It's just a desire to do something differently. What you're doing isn't working, and you heard something here, you see something here, you have a desire. That's all it is. Or else you'd need to recommit to your program. Does anybody want a 24-hour chip of desire? No calories. They're good chips to have. They will be here next week.
Thanks, Betsy.
You're welcome. All right. Okay. Step ups. At this point in our meeting, we ask the group to join us as we celebrate another example of the miracles that abound in OA. The stepping up portion of the meeting asks a sponsor to introduce a newcomer who has at least 70 days of back-to-back abstinence, who has completed the first 3 steps of the program, and who is now ready to become a sponsor. At HOW meetings, new sponsors are presented with a cactus plant to signify the tough love of the program. Stick with the stickers and remember to drink your water. And reminder that we don't water down the program. Are there any step-ups? Not tonight. Anniversaries. Birthdays are celebrated for each year of continuous abstinence. At anniversaries, a candle is lit at the beginning of the meeting. We invite the person who is celebrating at an anniversary to come to the front of the room for the anniversary. Are there any anniversaries? Not tonight. Virtual attendees may sign up to celebrate your step-ups or anniversaries via the link on our website. The leader now qualifies for 10 minutes, and that would be... So I have some pictures. I don't know how you do that. I am Betsy H., a critical level compulsive overeater and a food restrictor. Thank you. And I am so grateful to be here. I haven't been here for a little while, and it feels really great to be here and to see all of you virtually. My high weight, I will tell you, because I'm going to tell you a little bit about where I came from, where I am, and what happened, and where I'm headed. So I crawled into these rooms. I started in OA in 1975. When I was a child, I will just tell you that my high weight in OA was almost 195 pounds. It was very short-lived. Most of my life has been in these rooms of Overeaters Anonymous. But when I weighed that much, I did all the crazy things that compulsive overeaters do. I lived in a small town. I had moved there. I was almost a size 5. and I thought I'd make the geographical cure because I had gotten thin. I moved to Montana and now I was going to be a free spirit. And within a year, I weighed almost 195 pounds, size 18 pants, splitting at the seams. I was a very, very sick woman. I did things that not normal people do. I ate out of the garbage. I stole food. I'd work at co-ops or go to co-ops and think that it was a free grazing place. These are not things that normal people do. I was a waitress, and the whole town got to watch me grow in size. I was so humiliated. And I felt like I had some kind of a complete, you know, intimacy with these people because I found it very safe to eat off their plates when they were done. That's not what a normal eater does. It's a very sick, sick thing. And I was a sick person. What my sponsor told me the other day is our disease of compulsive eating wants us dead, but we'll settle for miserable. And I will tell you, I was a miserable person when I started to work OA back then. OA saved my life in so many ways. And I did kind of a half-assed OA program for many, many years. There's nothing wrong with OA. It just wasn't my way. I need structure. I need discipline. I need accountability. Otherwise, I won't do it. I could get dry in OA. I could put the food down, even sometimes white knuckle it for long periods of time. But I did not do the other things that allow for sobriety in this room. I did not have peace of mind. I was wound tight. I was miserable. My life was miserable. I lived in those rooms of Overeaters Anonymous and learned to restrict. So I went from 195 down to being normal weighted. I looked really good on the outside, and inside I was crazy as a loon. My mind was as fat as a 300-pound individual. I was obsessed, lots of self-hatred. I really blamed everybody else for my problem. I'd gotten married, had a child. I wanted a child my whole life of being married. Finally, we adopt a child. And I'm controlling her and I can't stop doing this. I can't stop this behavior because I'm afraid she's going to be molested like I was. I'm afraid she's going to be a compulsive overeater and I'm trying everything to stop her from doing this. It was not good and I was not nice. Wasn't black or white. I was also a lot of fun sometimes. But inside myself, I always had fear. Fear drove me crazy. I was obsessed with the size of my body. I was obsessed with what you thought of me, how I looked. I was constantly feeling and touching my body. Was I okay? And your opinion mattered more to me than anybody else. And I could talk the program like nobody's business because I had been around. I'd been sober for a long time. I'd gone to Al-Anon and I was working OA. And so I had great language, but not a lot of behavior changes. And I used to say to my husband, "Don't you think I've changed?" And he'd say, not really. Still, when push came to shove, what I did was when things got hard enough, I binged my brains out. It could be 3 months in, whatever. And then I heard about this crazy How program. And the person who brought How to this state, I was not pleased with her at all. Because a lot of my friends from my regular meeting were now coming over to How and getting well. I could not stand it. So what I did is I contacted one of the nutritionists that a lot of these people had used. She gave me a food plan. And do you think I followed it? With me in charge of it. If I needed to eat popcorn because I ate too much at lunch, that's what I did. So I was still controlling and manipulating my food. I never really admitted I was a compulsive overeater in my OA days. I could say it, but I never really believed it because I looked normal. But I was not normal. I was really, really sick. And sometimes I think people won't believe my story because I didn't weigh 300 pounds. But if you ever wanted to talk to me back then, you would know I was a really sick person. I couldn't make decisions when I first started. I couldn't do anything. I was just so obsessed with everything and so afraid. And everybody was my problem. It's like Howard said, if something went wrong, it was your problem. You did it, you know, it wasn't me. If my husband would only change, then I'd be fine. If my daughter was perfect, I'd be okay. And even if they were, I was not okay. I was miserable. My life was miserable and unmanageable. And I was, you know, my disease really wanted me dead, because at that point in my life, I thought the greatest thing I could ever experience was to be abstinent and thin. And here I had it. And I wanted to kill myself. I didn't want to live, but I was not going to do that to my daughter, because I knew too many people who had committed suicide, and then I knew their children. It was not fun. So thank God for that. But what I did was the next thing. The only other thing to do when you're feeling desperate enough to kill yourself is to crawl into a HOW meeting. And that's what I did. I crawled into HOW, and I was so desperate. And what I just learned God meant, what God means, G-O-D, is the gift of desperation. Mm-hmm. I was desperate to do whatever I was told, and I did. And I will tell you, my life is not the same because I put my food in the damn cups. I couldn't believe what freedom really felt like, to be really free of that desire to eat compulsively. I had never experienced that. I could white knuckle it, I could get through it, but I never had that peace and serenity. And I think I say that serenity prayer and I don't feel anything. And then I had a sponsor who suggested that I start saying the serenity prayer like I mean it. And, you know, for such reasons with my, I have trouble with my gallbladder, and my nutritionist suggested I don't eat yams or sweet potatoes anymore. It's a very sad thing. And my husband got one today, and I found myself saying the serenity prayer. It's like, just not today. My gut feels much better. Not today am I going to eat a yam. But my marriage is like, I can't believe it. I just can't believe it. Our daughter just left home, and I was so scared. God, will me and my husband like each other still without Josie around? We do. We really love each other. It's like amazing. It's like remembering who he was. And if I didn't have this program, I'd still be blaming him for everything. And I have peace of mind. I mean, it's like day after day, I'm telling my sponsor, I feel really good. I have peace of mind. And at first I was, you know, I'm so used to being miserable and uncomfortable and anxious that when I started to feel peaceful, I started to feel a little bit anxious, you know, at first. But I'm starting to dig it. I'm starting to like feeling this serenity that we're promised if we work this program. God is doing for me completely what I cannot do for myself. If it was left up to me, I would never, ever have the freedom. This is, I don't have to feel weird about feeling good because I didn't do it. I have a whole fellowship of people that support me every single day. I'm not kidding. It's like that one person talked about, I think it was for the telephone. I can call anybody. There's a meeting right there. Somebody can help me. Regardless of what I've gone through, there's been somebody in this program who's been able to hold my hand and walk with me. I never walk alone, and God willing, I never have to, because I don't walk far from the ditch. I'm just one bite away, always. And I am so grateful. Service is one of the greatest gifts that I can do, because I don't ever want to forget where I came from. I was one really sick cookie, and today I have freedom as a result of following some simple guidelines, which in the beginning felt like torture. But year after year, day after day, they get easier. And the good news is you don't have to know how to do it all at once. It just slowly starts, you know, the sock gets lifted off your head and you start to see life as it is. So grateful to be here, and that's it. Oh, and my phone number, please call, is 952-544-7332, and it's Central Standard Time. Okay. Now, I would like to introduce Nancy, our guest speaker, who qualifies for 20 minutes.
Hi.
Hi, Nancy.
Hi. Welcome. Hi. How you doing?
Good.
I really am not a fan of technology. Thanks to people that have helped me. I was asked to tell my story. I hope you can see me, and I think you can hear me.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I have been in program a while. I'm starting to tell you a story, what it's like and what it is now. And I came from a family. I was born 2 months premature. I was born in June. I was supposed to be born in August. I was born into a family where my mother was not a compulsive overeater. She's 5'2" and about 105 pounds. My father was tall and slim. And I fit into a shoebox when I was born. So I was small. And I found out I was different from my mother. I had a craving for food very early on, especially things with sugar in it. Also a combination of sugar and fat. And fat and salt. And I remember my mother could leave food on her plate. Food was just fuel for her body. And she would make dishes of tapioca pudding and she'd put them in the refrigerator and we could only have one. And I wanted all of them. And I loved holidays, Halloween, Thanksgiving, Christmas, birthdays, where people would bring out all the food. My mother would fix special foods and everybody would eat as much as they want. And I loved those moments that where I could do that because I could really get the food I normally couldn't get because my mother watched the food. And I was a good kid and so I didn't steal a lot of food. I did a little bit of that, but not a lot. And so I was a normal size when I was growing up. I was not overweight. And my disease started showing up much later. I have some pictures and I'll show them in a minute. Not very many, I got a couple. And my disease, I got through childhood and high school and it started blossoming when I went away to college. And I worked in a dorm and I ate food and I go in the cafeteria and they have these different fields and I just pile up my plate. My mother wasn't there and I would scrape off the dishes as a job. And you know, so I had access to the food in the cafeteria and I took advantage of it. And somehow, I don't know why my weight didn't show up. I was still normal size, even eating like I did eat. But I just ate at mealtimes. I just piled up my plate. So my eating wasn't as under control as it would be in the future. I really didn't know what being overweight was because I grew up with a mother that was so small. She was like a size 2. And so for me, being overweight still was in the normal range. But when I got into my 20s and I got on my own, I married somebody who was overeater and he was 350 pounds plus and his weight just kept increasing and I felt I could eat whatever I wanted to eat because he couldn't tell me how to eat because he was overweight himself. And I not only got to see a mirror of myself, I also got to see a mirror with him. And that was very hard because I didn't really feel good about myself and I saw another person who didn't feel good about himself. And so that was hard at times. I want to talk a little bit about my disease was not so much triggered by how I look so much as something else. I was born premature and I had trouble with my eyes. I was born cross-eyed and my eyes didn't focus together, where they overfocused. So I had 2 eye operations when I was 3 years old. And they overcorrected the eyes and I had strabismus. And so my eyes didn't focus like other children's eyes do. It's so important to be able to look people in the face and to talk to them. And you just judge a lot of things with your eyes. And I was lousy at sports because I had no depth perception. I was slow in school because it took me longer to process information. And so I just struggled when I was a kid and food was one of the things I disappeared into. And that was my comfort, was overeating. But I just didn't have a lot of chances to do it as a child because of my mother and how she was. So when I got with my husband, then my overeating really blossomed. And I remember we would go to potlucks
and I would just fill up my plate. I'd go back two or three times, and people didn't really notice me. I was sort of a quiet person and kept to myself in high school, grade school. I did some things with people, but I was sort of on the outside. People didn't recognize me. Then people started recognizing how much food I was taking. And I was just mortified because I didn't think anybody paid attention to that. And so I, at the time this was happening, I was working a job. I was working at a crisis intervention center, and they had resources for overeating, compulsive overeating, eating problems, eating disorders, whatever. And so Overeaters Anonymous was one of them, and it was free. And so in 1980, I was in my late 20s, and I went to my first Overeaters Anonymous up in Reston, Virginia. And it was really strange. Back then, they had food plans, and that's what I was looking for, a diet, and that's what I got. And so, but they would talk about the steps, and they talk about spirituality, and they talk about turning your life over, and I was really turned off by religion. I had, my mother was Baptist and very religious. My father was agnostic and atheist. So I had a very split family on that, and I didn't want to hear any more about religion. And I thought, if you need that crutch, fine for you. I don't need it. So I grabbed one of the food plans and walked out of the meeting and started following it. And I lost the weight within a few months. I was about maybe at the time I did that, maybe it was like 40, 50 pounds heavier than I normally. And why I went there was because I couldn't lose weight on my own anymore. What I was doing, the dieting wasn't working. And I don't know why I didn't think much of the people in that room. I didn't think I had anything common with them. I was pretty arrogant because, you know, I knew how to diet, and obviously the people in that room didn't. And so I didn't identify with them. And, but I felt like I didn't pay anything for it, so I could go back, at least look like I cared a little bit about what they gave me. So I went back a couple meetings, and then eventually they had the For Day book, which we read today, and I really identified with that because the readings were short, and I liked that. The big book, not so much, because it was about alcoholics, and I didn't see myself as being an alcoholic. And but one thing I did get from the AA literature was they said the hoop is a lot wider than you think. And I needed to hear that because I was like, you know, maybe this program, there is something to this program. And I did go off and on. I eventually did get a sponsor. And I had a very strong idea how I was going to work the program. And I remember telling the sponsor, you know, I'll do steps 1 and 4, but I have no desire to do steps 2 and 3. And she calmly and serenely told me the program didn't work that way. And why that lady stuck with me and was my sponsor is beyond me, because I was pretty willful. I called her when I wanted to call her. I got upset if people didn't call me back. I was pretty self-centered. And I really thought of the program as a diet club for a long time. And I stayed on the food plan for 4 years. I white knuckled it. I wasn't very nice, but I was following it. And eventually I went off it and I started overeating again and gaining weight. And I love what people say about not getting this stuff right away, because I didn't. I didn't put down I dieted and I followed the food plan, but I really didn't give up the food. And so I would, you know, do things for a little while and then take my will back. And I also decided to call the group my higher power. But again, I was doing it on my terms. I took what I wanted and left the rest. I didn't exactly understand what that meant. And somebody early on said, leave your intellect at the door. And I had no idea what the person was talking about. Now I do. So I had a lot to learn, and I wandered in that wilderness for a very, very long time, from 1980. And I'm going to show you a picture, because I don't know if you can see it. It's a little dark, and the one that's a little bit darker is me at 185 pounds, and the other one is in high school when it was a normal weight. And I got really scared because I didn't want to approach 200 pounds. I was married to somebody who was 350 pounds plus. His health was badly affected by it. And I was a lot in denial. I really wasn't working my program. I did go to meetings, but I wasn't using. And I would I'd do the talk, but I didn't do the walk. I'd go through the workbook. I would do things people asked me to do, but I wasn't willing to give things up. And so in 1995, a series of bad things happened to me. In the beginning of that year, somebody committed suicide, somebody I knew. My husband and I worked together. We did training together and we started losing contracts. And I was in denial and I was eating and gaining a lot of weight. My husband was in a depression and I was in denial about it. So we were losing work. The dog died in the summer, which was really hard. And then in the end of September, my husband died. And I knew it wasn't on his death certificate that he died of this disease, but I know the disease contributed to his death. And I got really scared. I mean, I'd have to work really hard. I was at 185 pounds at that point, 95. And I got scared. I watched him die and I knew I had to do something. And I started working my OA program like I never worked it before. And going to the meetings, doing the tools, and I brought my weight down. But, you know, my will came back because as soon as I got my weight off, I thought I was doing better. And I thought that I got it. And I decided that I was going to get married again. And I started dating after a year. And I started taking back my will. I looked good. I should be able to handle this. I should be able to do this. And I didn't choose well. I chose somebody who really wasn't very well. And I ended up that I was gaining weight again. But worse than that, I was really had no serenity. I was going crazy inside. And so in February of 1998, for the very first time, I went to a nutritionist. And I was at step one. I said, I really don't know how to handle my food. I think I do, but I don't. And the nutritionist told me then and there, she said, you know, you're carved out before the morning even starts. You know, eat an orange instead of drinking this tall glass of orange juice. And I thought she was some type of food Nazi. I said, I had to pay this lady. She told me this. And I was really pissed. And she gave me a food plan. And I don't like water and I don't like vegetables. And, but I started doing what she told me to do because I was miserable and falling apart and I didn't know what else to do. And because of following a nutritionist, the food fog disappeared and I was able to leave the relationship. I physically lost, found myself driving off. I lived with him. I was engaged to him and I went back. I still kept my house. I went back to my house and I'd hit another bottom. I thought nothing could be worse than 95. And what I found was that was not the case. And so my weight is interesting. My weight, I still looked normal, but I was crazy inside. And I had a friend who was in OA How, and I thought, oh, wait, how people are a bunch of food Nazis. I didn't think very highly. I'm very anal. And the last thing I was going to do was work OA How. And in the spring of 98, I walked into my OA How meeting it was a face-to-face for the first time. And by the fall, I'd stepped up and been a sponsor. And I started working my program like I'd never worked it before. What I found is that this is a journey and my abstinence changed, my spirituality changed, all of it has changed. And I had a lot to learn. Abstinence, I kept having to give up foods that I thought I could handle. I thought I could handle caffeine, couldn't handle caffeine. had to give up combination foods, had to give up sugar. I gave up sugar long before anything else, but I found there's certain foods I reacted to that I could never really have, even being on a so-called abstinent food plan thing. I found triggers. And so I ended up giving up caffeine. I ended up giving up a lot of sugar-free foods as well. And my weighing and measuring, I used to do mostly cups and measuring spoons. And then I got more and more to the digital scale. I still use a combination of both. And my food just got cleaner as I went on, even being abstinent. The other thing is that things change. I loved going to a face-to-face meeting. This is what I remember, the closest thing to a face-to-face meeting I haven't had for a long, long time. Because I went to the phone meeting because not enough people in my area, I'm in from Richmond, Virginia, wanted to work HAO. HAO was stronger at one point, and they got to the point where there were like maybe two of us, and then there was just me. And I couldn't have a HAO meeting with just me. So the meeting said, we have to change. We can't call ourselves a HAO meeting anymore. And that was really hard for me. I didn't want to give that up. And I, because I said I'd work HAO, I can remember being on the phone the next day on the phone meetings and calling people and cold calling people and really not wanting to do it and knowing that it didn't matter how I felt. I was responsible for my recovery and my absence, and nobody else was. And so I got off my pity pot and started working my program and realized that I could be grateful for people, or I could wallow in self-pity and say, poor me. And I had choices. And I learned to accept that things were not the way they were going to be. And so I probably have been on the phone meetings for maybe five, six, 7 years, maybe longer. I'm not really sure. And I'm still evolving. The spiritual part of the program is the hardest part for me to work is turning things over to, I didn't used to believe in God, but now I do, into God, and doing that third step. And I used to not know the prayers, and now I do say some prayers. And really saying, okay, God, I can't do this. Help me do this. Tonight is a good example, because this is not the type of, the technology and all this is not comfortable for me. It's very uncomfortable for me. But somebody asked me to give service, and I said I would. And so it's just that taking that first step and just taking it and allowing myself to fall. And the most important things that I'm learning to do is to learn to love myself, so, and then I can love others. It's a very hard thing for me to do, and I'm 67 years old, and I'm still learning how to do it. And I also am discovering that I have some really wonderful talents that I'm developing finally at my age. And that's really exciting to be enjoying life and finding out more who I am, and being able to appreciate other people as well. And I have also in another 12-step program, which a lot of people are. And so my recovery is deepening I'm no longer cross-addicting. So I guess that's it. My time's over.
Mm-hmm. Nancy, would you please share your telephone number?
Surely, I will. My telephone number, I'm Eastern Time, is 804-519-6012.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Thanks, Nancy. All right. The floor is now open for 3-minute pitches or sharing. In HAO meetings, we share our experience, strength, and hope. No one is prohibited from sharing, but we ask that you focus on the solution. All pitches should be of a positive nature in which you share your growth and recovery. All other issues can be worked on out over on the phone or after the meeting. Would someone please care to pitch? Virtual sharing can be done by turning on your camera and unmuting yourself.
Good evening, this is Mary G again. I wanted to report back, I think I said a couple weeks ago, yes?
Hi, Mary.
Oh, hi. I was gonna go back to my nutritionist because I had gained some weight and I was so thankful that I had a nutritionist because I didn't have to think about crazy diets or skipping meals or doubling up on my exercise. So I did that, it'll be a week ago tomorrow. And she actually had my most recent weight because I had been into a clinic, an acute clinic the previous Friday because of an ear infection. So she had that weight, I mean, she had it. And I went in with my food plan and my, you know, all the stuff. And I said, okay, so what should I do? And she said, I don't want you to do anything. She said, you just told me that you'd had some back issues early in January and your usual exercise regime, which is not that big a deal, but you were unable to do that for several weeks. And she said, at your age, I love that. She said, nutritionally, you'd be at risk if we took any stuff away. So I think you're just fine. And I thought, oh my gosh. You know, because all those thoughts, those crazy thoughts that you know, we had all for years of my life, and then to have a professional say, you're just fine, just, it's okay. So I just want to, again, three cheers for our professionals that we were required to see. With that, I pass.
Thanks, Mary. Anybody else want to share? All right. I want to thank you for allowing me to be your leader for this meeting today. I also want to thank all those who participated, especially our speaker, Nancy, who offered so much of herself. Yay, Nancy. Okay, just gonna ask once more if anybody wants to share for a little pitch at the end of the meeting. All right. Okay. May we please have the reading of Just for Today.
Hello, my name is Tamara. Excuse me, I'm a compulsive overeater.
Hey, Tamara.
Hello, Just for Today. I will try to live through this day only and not tackle my whole life problem at once. I can do something for one day that would appall me if I felt I had to keep it up for a lifetime. Just for today, I will be happy. This assumes to be true what Abraham Lincoln said, that most folks are as happy as they make up their minds to be. Just for today, I will adjust myself to what is and not try to adjust everything to my own desires. I will take my luck as it comes and fit myself to it. Just for today, I will try to strengthen my mind. I will study. I will learn something useful. I will not be a mental loafer. I will read something that requires effort, thought, and concentration. Just for today, I will exercise my soul in three ways. I will do somebody a good turn and not get found out. If anyone knows of it, it will not count. I will do at least two things I don't want to do just for exercise. I will not show anyone that my feelings are hurt. They may be hurt, but today I will not show it. Just for today, I will be agreeable. I'll look as well as I can, dress becomingly, talk low, act courteously, criticize not one bit, not find fault with anything, and not try to improve or regulate anybody except myself. Just for today, I will have a program. I may not follow it exactly, but I will have it. I will save myself from two pests, hurry and indecision. Just for today, I will have a program. I may not follow it exactly, but I will have it. I will save myself from two pests. I think I just said that one. Hurry and indecision. Just for today, I will have a quiet half hour all by myself and relax. During this half hour sometime, I will try to get a better perspective of my life. Just for today, I will be unafraid. Especially, I will not be afraid to enjoy what is beautiful and to believe that as I give to the world, so the world will give to me. And I pass.
Thanks, Tamara. Okay, for those joining us in person, I would like to ask for your help in putting away the equipment and bringing this room back to its original setup after we have concluded our closing prayer. Thanks for your help with this. We would also like to thank our skilled interpreters for helping us to reach even more people who struggle with this disease. Woo! All right, thank you. Closing statement. To those who are still new to the program, we remind you that all that was said here today should safely remain here. Excuse me, as we respect and cherish our tradition of anonymity. We also assure you that following the program will get your weight off or on. Abstinence will remove the cravings. Our way of life will remove compulsion in time and give you contentment in all areas of your life. After a moment of meditation, will those who wish to please join us in saying the Serenity Prayer. Those attending virtually, please unmute yourselves. Let's pray for those who are still suffering. That's the end, right? Okay. God,
grant me the serenity. Grant me the things I cannot change. Courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Give a lot of love and service.
Thanks, guys. Good night. Thank you.
Thanks.
Good night, everybody. Woo-hoo. Thank you. Good night, everyone.
Good night, everyone.
Good night. Yeah, good night.
Can I have the leader's name, please, again, and number?